Welcome on to a brand new episode of Bottom Line Baseball. I'm Alex Fuse. There's Jackson Ryan. And joining us on the podcast today, we have a very special guest, Darren Sutton. He's the new voice of the Angels play-by-play announcer. Darren, is it still considered new to you, even though it's been a month and a half into the season, or is kind of the new worn off by now?
No, it's still new, and I think it's because of the peace of mind and the joy that goes into having this job and being fortunate enough to have this job. You know, having the game in my life, Jackson knows it, you know it, that it's something none of us are entitled to being around at any level. And so when I stopped doing it in 2012 and really invested myself in the youth game and in the amateur game, I didn't know if I'd ever go back again. And I don't know that I ever was too concerned about it. You know, I'm a pretty prayerful person. So if that was meant to happen, then the opportunity would open up. And it just so happened, very, very humbled by it, as I say to you guys, just so happened with kind of the team that I fell in love with baseball, watching when my father finished his career there, the team that I pitched for pretty poorly in the minor leagues, and the team that gave me a shot as a radio announcer when I was not too much older than you guys. So yeah, it hasn't hit home yet. I've had my moments in the booth where I get angry at an opposing manager or a player for their choice, or I get frustrated when the bullpen blows a lead, when I realize, okay, I'm officially the team's announcer. I'm feeling that gut feeling in my stomach that honestly I didn't feel for the first 3 weeks when doing it.
Darren, for those who don't understand, what does preparation look like for you before an Angel game?
I guess it depends, Jackson, between the game to game and the series. As we have this conversation, I'm heading into game three of a series with Cleveland. And so the preparation is going to look different today. The preparation is going to be almost totally focused on the two starting pitchers only. And then, you know, where both these teams stand a little bit league-wide with regard to perspective. The heaviest preparation is in game one of the series, going into game one of the series. Not as much for my guys, meaning the guys that I see on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, so I share the role with Matt Vasgersian. So I may sometimes take a week off from doing this. So I'll have to read back in on my guys, though I watch almost every game. But Jackson, it's a lot of it is statistical. Some of it is biographical for my guys. I know a lot of their stories, but there are new ones that come out. There are articles that are re-released where you dive deeper, or I should say released, where you dive deeper into someone's family life, the adjustments they've made in the cage. But I think a lot of it, game one of a series, let's say against Cleveland, is a little deeper because you just want to make sure you have a feel for who the opposing team is. Now, I don't announce for Cleveland, but I like to know about Cleveland. I like to, if a player is from Southern California collegiately, if a player had a unique journey, if a player was raised by a single mom, has overcome some challenges, those stories matter to me. And I think they matter to a majority of our viewers. So by the time I'm in game three of the series, though, for the offensive players, it's how they've done in the series. What have I seen? And then, of course, as we have this conversation, I prepare for a Shohei Ohtani start on the mound tonight. So I'm seeking more perspective. I find myself trying not to use hyperbole because what you see is what you see on the field. But I'll prepare again just to see what else I can learn about this unique player tonight.
I'm always interested in this. When you aren't calling Angel games and you're watching, do you listen? Because Vin Scully, I've never heard an announcer say this, but Vin Scully says he never listens to a broadcaster. So do you listen to the games?
All the time. And I'm gonna answer your question because I'm doing this. Sorry, the way I'd like to answer it because it's such a great question. I just don't listen to myself. Now, a lot of broadcast, I don't go back, and boy, a lot of experts would say, Sut, wrong, 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 wrong. You have to listen to yourself. I think I love receiving coaching. I love receiving guidance. We have some great leaders with Bally Sports and then some leadership with the Angels where I've already kind of got my hands on some things. It's almost like having a hitting coach that I've needed to tweak. I came back into this job and was revved up to, you know, a million RPMs because I missed it. But you don't do play-by-play of a major league game like you're doing for the Perfect Game All-American Classic. For the PG All-American Classic, you have to introduce every athlete the moment they step in the box, and you never stop talking, and you're going so fast, and you keep going and going until you get everything out about them. Oh, my gosh, if you do that in the big league game, you're going to wear people out. So to answer your question, I don't watch myself, go back and watch games, do love receiving guidance and coaching, but I love watching and listening to other announcers, and especially Matt. I'm in this unique vortex that I've captured myself in, where my wife and stepdaughter, my wife before we met, and we're fairly newly remarried, about, you know, 4 years now. She didn't care for baseball, didn't like baseball, didn't want anything to do with baseball. Kind of made it appealing to me, quite frankly, to open the mind, right? But now she does, because not as much the youth players, certainly, that I'm around in my other day job, but this is a way to plug into a team through the human being. So my wife and stepdaughter love watching. So when, you know, they're back in Arizona or here, they'll watch. So when I have a stretch where I'm off, most husbands would say the last thing I do is watch the game. My wife does not want to watch the game. Are you kidding me? Don't watch baseball. I need you. They want to watch the game. They remind me that it starts at 5. They want to sit down for the open. We pause on the MLB app when we go do something. They love the fact that if we come in a little late, we watch the game and we can skip the commercial. Sorry, all my sponsors on Bally Sports, but they love that. So I'm in this unique vortex where, yes, I'm watching. Yes, I'm watching and listening to Matt, enjoying listening to Matt, his anecdotes and the way he presents the game, appreciating the way he calls for the team that I cover as well. So, yeah, I do love listening to announcers. I see eye to eye with a lot of things on, Vin, but not that one.
Hey, Darren, what is it like to work with Matt Vasgersian? Obviously, he's been at MLB Network and a couple other places before, but what is it like to get to finally know him and to call games with him?
So I think one of the best parts about it is kind of the differences. You know, Jackson, any great baseball team has players that are different shapes and sizes and heights and different colors of skin and socioeconomic backgrounds. And so for Matt, I love that he has a different style than I do, yet we've been colleagues for a long time. I mean, I replaced him in Milwaukee a long time ago when he left to go to San Diego. That's 2002. So I've always looked up to him. I've admired his journey. When I've stepped aside to calling games and really was able to build what we built with Perfect Game, still watched him. And I think one of the great parts about it, I was driving into the ballpark yesterday and my phone rang and it was Matt. He's back East right now. He was about to host on MLB Network and we talked about the team together. So even though it's either a me or Matt situation and you could easily not really communicate at all if you wanted to, it's Matt and I talking all the time. It's a text, it's a phone call. It's, you know, kind of some things that we talk about privately that I probably would never repeat, because you go through things as a play-by-play announcer, meeting about the team or your joys, your frustrations, learning about, you know, do we hate only having Zoom access to the players? Well, yes, we do. So what are we going to do about it? Because we're going to be optimistic about it. We're going to move forward. And it may be the way it always goes for the next couple of years or forever with the way the union's working out, protecting the clubhouse. So it allows to have a colleague and an ally that's pretty darn high level. And I can learn from him. And he's pretty, even though he's old and square like I am, he's pretty hip too, because he's the voice of the show. And anybody that plays anything virtually as far as, you know, video and is a gamer, they know Matty. I mean, they know Matty big time.
So is this your first year of calling games virtually?
Yes, in the big leagues, yes. Now, this is where this whole thing you're seeing, this Perfect Game and Perfect Game TV, prepped me, and I didn't know it would, because all through last year, and I mean in the heart of the pandemic, where everyone was scared to do anything, and understandably so, we, with Perfect Game, you know, safely moved forward with events, and whether it be a 9U, 10U, 11U, 12U, or All-American games, I sat at my desk in Scottsdale, and called game after game after game. My production truck was in Orange County, California. The cameras were at East Cobb. They were locked down in a ballpark. And I had, you know, associate producer sitting on a little chair next to me. I had an analyst in New York or other places in the country. So yes, in the big leagues, but no. And so I didn't realize I was training myself up. I didn't realize that, you know, I was going to be a lot more prepared than I thought. But Alex, yeah, I mean, I called a ton of amateur and youth baseball games last year on this very same laptop that we're talking now.
Darren, what does Perfect Game mean to you?
They mean loyalty. You know, when I got let go a couple of years back in Arizona and made some changes in my life, they stepped up and said, come join us. Let's build something together. And I said, since I have this unique situation where I'm going to get, you know, paid in a contract for 4 more years and not have to worry about finances. It was a real blessing personally at home to spend more time with my family. And then to say to PG, let's not worry about any kind of a job title or any kind of a compensation. Someone else is going to take care of that for a while. Let's build something. And so Jerry Ford is a visionary. He founded Perfect Game with that vision of taking players in the middle of the country and getting the word out when the internet was launching and getting started in 95, getting them to the coast, getting them to USC, UCLA, getting them down to play for Miami and the Florida Gators, and using the internet through showcases and through well-run showcases. And so when I went through my professional transition, and this group believed in me, and they've now since taken on some more investors and grown exponentially. They're creative. They do it the right way. They value athletes. It's a platform. It's not a it's not a coaching entity, but it's a platform that's done a nice job. I think Jerry's goal, it sounds sometimes a little bit where people will doubt that it's, no, that's just the words. You know, that can't be accurate. There are times when people will pause and think, there's no one, someone says, I just want to really grow the game. Well, he does. Now, in growing the game, he's grown a huge company. Let's be clear about that. And that has provided opportunities for us and for me to assist in launching a streaming network, 3 Sirius XM radio shows. So Jackson, I think Perfect Game, just like in the early stages of big league baseball or the growth of college baseball, I think Perfect Game was at the forefront of growing the prospect space, and now they're gonna put their hand in the youth space and do a nice job with it. It's not a straight battle with USSSA at any level. There's room for everyone. As long as you put the kids first, there's room for everyone.
You said, as long as you put the kids first, anyone that does anything as a broadcaster, especially in baseball, loves the storytelling component and just trying to get to understand what makes a person tick. How much do you enjoy that with a Perfect Game League?
Oh gosh, I love it. One of my favorite first features and stories were Jackson and I spending time together when he was in high school and talking about his journey and some of his challenges, his joys. I love it. I love it. There are times as we've grown and the pandemic has set in where I miss the touch and feel at the events, the one-on-one with the athlete, or really embedding in a dugout during an event in Jupiter, Florida, or an event in East Cobb. I hope to do more of that this summer, or at least share the time with those that do that. But it's the great conversations. Look, we all were aware of what happened last year, especially early in the summer, where all sorts of different folks and all sorts of people that we cared about that are baseball-centric people felt disenfranchised and hurt. You know, I loved, even though it was through Zoom, that we had some amazingly deep educational conversations with young African-American athletes and what their families and their homes were going through. So it's a lot more about how do you hold your curveball. It's a lot more about than what you make on your ACT because you're a good high school player. There's nothing wrong with any of that, but it's gone way, way deeper than that. Jackson knows it. We all know it. It's gone way, way deeper than that. It's about life. It's about family. It's about faith. You know, if you want to talk about your faith, you're welcome to talk about it here on our platform. So I love the storytelling part of it because your generation, quite frankly, and a little bit younger than you guys, you're better at it than we are. And baby boomers are not as good at it at all. You know, they're very private, you know, and so this generation and your generation really are great storytellers and are unafraid to be vulnerable. And you can learn a lot when you're around a lot of people that are unafraid to be vulnerable.
Darren, you touched on it, but how do you decide what story you want to get out in which situation and who you want to talk to during Perfect Game events and which players you want to go to?
I think a lot of it, Jackson, is based on our little radio show that airs on SiriusXM because we can't be at every event. We do go to the big events. We go to the national showcase. We go to the junior national. And when I say we, it's a big team, a media team, you know, to the 17 UWWBA. To the All-American Classic. You know, I can name off the Super Bowls that PG has. So we'll bring a full media team to those. But darn if that radio show doesn't allow me every single week to connect to a minimum of 3 high school or college age athletes. And now we also have a college baseball show that's 52 weeks a year that's on ESPNU on XM and a college softball show. So that kind of helps me decide, Jackson, to by the time I get to the event, a lot of times I've been able to have you know, a study up. I've been able to have a great conversation. And, you know, there are some silly little secrets that aren't mine that I've learned on how to connect with athletes, you know, to take surveys, to answer questions where they can just do it here and share a little about the, you know, I've had athletes answer a questionnaire or survey to me where they're opening up about the loss of a family member, where they're talking about something that they've either struggled with or have joy about. And then you dive deeper. So determining it, I'm very fortunate that we have our radio show, because that kind of, without having to go to everyone's home and all around the country, and much of what you guys do is a good example of it too. Our radio show, where we've got to have it, man, every week. Sometimes I'm like, ah, I have to do this. But then I'm glad, because you get to meet three more athletes and learn three more stories.
Let's take a minute and talk about the Angels a little bit. The biggest news story, unfortunate news story, comes out this week about Mike Trout. He's going to be on the IL for about 6 to 8 weeks with a calf strain. Obviously, Mike Trout is one of the best players. I have to say one of, because of Ohtani now. So how crucial is this injury for the Angels?
Super crucial, because Jordan Adele and Brandon Marsh, who are two super prospects, and Adele's one of my old school PG guys, you know, when I first started there, they're not ready yet. Adele is going to be special, had a cup of coffee last year, to use an old baseball term, and was raw and wasn't ready defensively, and the strikeout numbers are high, and Brandon Marsh hasn't been on the field enough. So these are two super prospects. They're not Mike Trout. I want to be clear on that. But I think if it was right there in front of you, you could just say, bring them both up, put them in the outfield, let them play every day. Let's hope Justin Upton finds a little bit of who he can be, or Juan Lagares can, you know, take his glove and make it super valuable, as it was when he won a gold glove with the Mets. But this one hurts. This one hurts badly. And, you know, I've followed Mike Trout from afar. I'm a fan just like you guys, so I can read and understand it, watch some games when they were on, but I didn't get it. And turns out he had one of the best first months he's ever had. So it spoiled me. I really didn't get it till I saw it every single day. It's ridiculous, boys. And that's including a quiet May where he was superhuman. Sometimes he looked like you and I hitting in May, and he still went on the, you know, injured list with the league's lead and on base and in slug and a couple other key categories. So it hurts. He won't be replaced. So you cobble together and hope that, you know, players grab opportunities, that a guy named Taylor Ward, who you might not have heard of, grabs an opportunity, that Juan Lagares, though he's past 30 now, plays like he played. It's tale as old as time. Jackson's grandfather went through it. His dad, as a boss of a team, went through it, where you cross your fingers and you pray at night that somebody finds something that they either haven't found yet, or that they're going to go back and find from when they were younger. But you can't replace Mike Trout. So I think the biggest hope as a guy who calls the game for this team is, you know, it's not a 6 week span in which they win 35% of their games, because that'd be tough.
Darren, also another part of the organization that needs to play better too is the bullpen. How important is it for the bullpen to close games out for the Angels, like they did against the Red Sox that last game of the series?
Super important. And it's a fun bullpen. It was with intent when they built this bullpen this year. And there were some last minute additions as well, that they, you know, don't have a bunch of guys that throw 98 and drop sliders on the outside corner. It's different arm angles. Alex Claudio's a left-handed sidearmer who can pitch every day. Steve Cishek's been around for a long time. He's a submarine guy from the right side. Tony Watson's had a great year. Oh my gosh. So yeah, I mean, it's super important. Raisel Iglesias has been nice. I'm not a big believer in the, you know, hey, it's a non-save situation, that's why he may struggle. So I think outs are outs, and he's finally gotten past that kind of inexcusable bump in the road for a big leaguer with his stuff. It's super important. The funny thing about this staff starting and relief pitching is that the advanced metrics like them, because they strike a bunch of guys out and they get a bunch of ground balls. I think there's this optimism that sooner or later, the deep numbers below the surface, below the ERA, which is not fun to look at, and below things like the win-loss record, that some of these will emerge and rise to the top. It's yet to be seen. I'm a 75% believer in that. I'm all in on advanced metrics. They're a big, important part of our show. But I do know I'm seeing a staff that's giving up runs. You know, I watched Andrew Heaney pitch last night, for an example, and he struggled. He struggled to be confident in the strike zone. And finally, you know, after throwing 40 plus pitches in the first inning, Joe Maddon, after he walked the 9-hole hitter, I believe in the fourth, said, I can't do it anymore. I'm going to go to my pen. Well, You know, the bullpen gets better, Jackson, when the pitchers go six, not seven or eight. We're not grandpa or not my dad. I get it, right? But it's nice when that happens. My goodness, hello. But just give me six. Give me five. Give me six, give me five. But you can't have a bullpen that's pitching 5.5 innings every night. Those guys are all going to be wanting a Caribbean vacation for a month here really, really soon to go relax. So it starts, Jackson, with the starting pitching. Look, Canning, Heaney, they all have elite stuff. Otani, again, there's a little bit of a high wire act there. Bundy, these guys can pitch six plus innings, and they need to. So that's where the bullpen gets better.
There's so much talk right now about how the game has changed in the last few years. You're a perfect person to ask. When you made your debut and were the Angels radio broadcaster, and you look back to your time then and your time now, how much has the game changed in that span of time?
A ton, and it's fun. I'm not a fatalist, and I don't like listening to people that say, and no offense, that the game is broken, and I'm so sad with the swings and misses. It's the game, and you can talk about it all you want, but it's not going back. And so we evolve. You're not going to be able to pick up a phone that's attached to the wall and do this anymore to dial numbers. It's not going back. What amazes me as far as watching pitching, that's kind of my specialty. Like I said, I tried to do it a little bit, did it in college, is watching the confidence in the high pitch, watching the confidence in the elevated pitch for a dude who throws 91, 88. It's funny because my father and Jackson's grandfather, different velocities, did that. They were confident going high fastball, breaking ball out of that zone. But there are guys that are thinking, okay, in this count, I'm going to throw a high cutter. I'm going to go ahead and work up with my changeup because it's a change of pace, and it's fine because everyone's looking elevated. Hitters getting more comfortable elevated. It's fun to see. It's unique. It's different. It evolves, right? It has a different look to it. So now the guy who comes in, who's going to command the Brandon Webb-like sinker, and I look forward to seeing that guy again, he's going to be good, man. I mean, that guy's going to be good, and he's going to have a lot of success. So that the way the game has evolved there, the movement around of defenses, I want to evolve. The band the shift mantra, it's not for me. We don't, in football, have the same defense every single time. Otherwise, it'd be 70-0 on the other side. And in basketball, you don't be assigned to standing in a circle and playing defense in an area. Okay, you can only play in here by the free throw line. Yet in baseball, there's a camp of people that want that. Really? Seriously? The game evolves, so it's totally different. It allows you to take, like, let's say Albert Pujols, who left the Angels, signs with the Dodgers. I watched him play defense. Look, I've seen his whole magical career. But Albert at first this year struggled. I mean, I watched him. He struggled defensively. And so the movement of defenses without Corey Seager, with Albert at first some, not all the time, allows you to hardcore move people around and take chances and cover where you might have warts. And you don't have Mike Trout in center field, so let's take a chance and move around. Look, it allows for creativity defensively. So that's how the game has changed. And it's evolved in that way. And now the other way the game has changed is we do interviews all the time, just like this. I haven't shaken the hand of a player this year, and I'm the voice of the team. Imagine that. So there's a couple of ways the game has changed. And it's fun, man, because evolution in life, it keeps – I'm not young. You guys are young. I want to stay young and fresh in my mind. So I'm all in. I'm all in with wherever it's going. I'm not piloting the boat. I'm just riding on it. So you're not going to hear me say the game is broken.
Darren, you talked about the shift as well. Do you feel like more people are going to continue to go that way, or until the guys figure out how to bunt and get the ball down?
Yeah, absolutely. And they should go that way because it's taken away a lot of success points for a lot of opposing hitters. I'm seeing it a little bit more. I saw Joey Gallo, the big slugger, drive in a run, dropping down a bunt against an Angels shift. I've seen Jared Walsh, who's having a really nice year, who kind of has taken over first base for the Angels, not with intent, Jackson, but I've seen him open up his approach. I've seen him be comfortable. Like, I'm beaten in right now with this pitch, so I'm not going to try and pull it, but I'm good enough and I'm on balance enough that I'm going to hit a 16 hopper this way. And guess what? That's a base hit. So I think that's what would be fun. The value of the bunt, the bunt is valueless unless you bunt for a hit, right? I mean, the bunt doesn't have a ton of value, but if you bunt for a hit, it does. And it's just, if you're in the camp that says a walk is a hit and a hit is a walk, on base percentage is all that matters, then the bunt's very valuable if it's a hit. So I think you will see a little bit more of that. I haven't seen a ton. I haven't seen as much as I thought I would. I'm trying to think where else I've seen it. But I saw, I think Taylor Ward tried to do it. And gosh, I even think the Dodgers were upset, stunningly enough, by it when the Angels were getting blown out. So I want to see it more, Jackson. I don't think that's the complete answer to beating the shift, but it's a big, big start. And I'll enjoy seeing it, but I don't think the shift's going anywhere.
This is our favorite part of the show, Darren. It's a fast five quick round. It's five quick questions, and you have as much time to answer as needed. Are you ready?
Yes. Is this trivia? Are you going to humiliate me, or is this opinion stuff?
No, maybe now. No. All right, ready. Here we go. So first one for me is, if you could pick and choose anyone to call a baseball game with, who would you choose and why?
My father, because in the 1994 strike, when baseball was shut down and I was a minor league announcer, my father came down and called Jacksonville Suns games with me on the radio. Dan Vaughn stepped aside and let him share the booth with me. And also, when I broke in as an announcer just prior to being one of the radio voices of the Angels, I did pre and post game shows for the Braves. Skip Carey, the late Skip Carey. Of course, my father passed this year as well, but the late Skip Carey gave me the chair for that road trip. And I got to call games in Yankee Stadium and in Montreal with my dad. Both stadiums gone now. So yeah, for sure, I'd love to call a nice long run of games with my dad to get inside his head as an announcer, to take his old school and talk about it, to hear stories, to bang heads, because he didn't like advanced metrics at all. So that's the easiest one you've given me, my dad.
Quick follow-up on that. When did you realize your dad was a big deal?
Woo. I don't know. Like, it's funny. I went to school up in LA in elementary school with some big deals per se. Like, it was in a school where there was actors and producers, record guys, sons, and Jason Bateman I went to school with him. We got in trouble a lot when we were in elementary school. I think it was when he played for the Angels that I really got it. And I'll tell you why. And hopefully this makes sense. I suddenly at 15 and 16 was a pretty good player. And I thought, I want to do this. I want to be a pro. And I was allowed to be around the pros because I could drive then and go work at the ballpark. That's when I realized that he was aging and ending his career. But I realized how amazing he was and how incredible this game is, how difficult it is to make it even to college, let alone to the next level. So I realized he was a big deal when I was about probably 16 years old.
What is your favorite perfect game moment?
Favorite perfect game moment. We talked about him earlier. It was Joey Gallo in the Perfect Game All-American Classic. I didn't work for Perfect Game at the time, and it was a live call, so if that's what we're seeking. Joey Gallo, who was in high school, who was from Bishop Gorman in Las Vegas, who was a big old drink of water, who threw 95 off the mound, hit what was at that time the fifth furthest home run in the history of Petco Park. By the way, a major league team played there at the time. And so for me, being able to call that game, and this is not to embarrass you, Jackson, but one of my other favorites was the piece we did together, because we were just launching a network. You were honest and awesome and inspirational in telling your story. So, you know, I've had some great conversations, but yours still is one of my favorites. So those are two of my favorites, not to embarrass you.
The third one for me is, it depends on this question, though. Did you ever play Strat-O-Matic?
No, I'm not that old. Come on now, leave me alone. I played like Nintendo baseball and all that good stuff.
I know,
but you're the advanced metrics guy. Like, if you played Strat-O-Matic, you're way ahead of me already. You're way smarter than I am already, and stuff I'm still trying to learn.
You got to learn it. You would love it, Darren. You would love it. It's the most fun game ever.
Okay, as soon as I have 5 minutes, I'll do it, man. I'm in. Winter time. That's what I'll do. I'll learn to speak Spanish because I'm dying to do it, and I'll play Strat-O-Matic. I might lose my marriage, but I'm going to do it for you, Alex. I'm in.
All right, Darren, my next one for you is, what is your favorite memory with your dad?
My favorite memory with my father, when he won his 300th game, it was as an Angel. And again, it was during that time space where I got it, where I understand that these dudes are dudes. And it'd be a miracle if I ever got to that level. And so I was able to be a part of the clubhouse staff. I was in uniform. I watched him throw a complete game when he was old and he shouldn't have thrown a complete game. And he beat Texas and he won his 300th game. And, you know, after he hugged his catcher, he found his son and hugged him because I was in uniform. And so to be out there, to be a part of that, to be intimate with his teammates, to see their reactions, to watch the back and forth with he and Bob Boone, who's a great baseball name, his catcher that night, absolutely my favorite. And then the second and a close second, I went up the year in 1998 when my dad was inducted into the Hall of Fame, sat in the audience when he was brought in, enjoyed every moment of it. And then he was whisked away in a car to go do media and then some one-on-one interviews with ESPN. I get that business a lot more now, but I hopped in a town car with him and I was with him the first moment he was alone after he was a Hall of Famer. And we rode in a car for about 10 minutes from one place to another. That's my other second favorite moment with my dad. A lot of just unique conversations. The first time he was alone and he was a Hall of Famer, I got to be alone with him. It was cool.
Amazing story there. And Darren, the last question that I have for you is simple. If a 15-year-old kid walked up to Darren's son right now and said, Darren, I'm not going to be a baseball fan. It's boring to me. I'm never going to watch. What are you saying to that 15-year-old kid?
Get to know the human beings that play the sport. Understand the pacing of it. I felt the same way about what to me is the world's greatest sport, you know, as far as globally, and that's soccer. And I got to know it through the eyes of my kids, and I got to know it through the eyes of my daughter who played it at a very high level, just shy of playing in college, and I appreciated the beauty of it. But get to know the human beings. You know, if you're truly against it, don't watch it. We don't need you. We're good. We'll be fine without you. We love you. Go watch whatever you enjoy watching. Life's not about me trying to push it down your throat. But since you asked, Alex, get to know the human beings. And I can answer that question because I am surrounded by people that are doing exactly what you said. If I would have run into them, my wife before I met her, my mother-in-law who's from Chile before I met her, my stepdaughter before I met her, and they would have said, baseball, schmaseball, you can have it. No thanks, it's boring. And now they can't look away. And so get to know the human beings, the intricacies of the game, the pacing of the game. You can get up and walk away. No one's going to be offended. You can't do that in hockey. You can't do that in basketball. Football, you could between plays because it drags. You can get up and walk away. No one's going to be offended. And go to a game and bring a date and bring a friend because it's social. It's different. It's completely, completely different. You'll sit next to somebody who's into every single pitch, and then you'll sit next to somebody else who maybe watches four pitches. So that's what I would encourage them. Get to know the human beings playing the game. Get to know the strategy of it and understand it's kind of partly a keg party too. So it's about the fun. So there's nothing wrong with that, right? There's nothing wrong with having a little fun.
Do you feel a responsibility as a broadcaster to try and bring in new fans every single night?
Yeah, and here's the way I try and do it, and it isn't always welcomed by the places I've worked, to not over-explain baseball. I do want to explain the simplicities of it and maybe give a background if I'm using a metric, but just to be human, to be warm, the way you guys host this podcast, to have people say, yeah, I turned that game on. Nah, I don't really care for the team, but I like hanging out with that Gubazaw and Sutton guy, that Gubazaw, Moda and Sutton guy, and that Vasgersian guy. You know, I like hanging out with them. They're funny. They're fun. They're enjoyable. And so that's always a challenge as a game caller. You'd never want to disrespect the game. But let's be honest, man, if it's 150 games on TV, there's this many percentages of people that are going to watch them all, literally. And I'd like to chat with them because they probably need to get out more. So the rest of them, that's who you're appealing to. Nothing means more to me that when someone pops over to me at, there's no such thing as a mall anymore, but back when there were malls, when someone pops over to me and says, hey, Sut, enjoy your work, blah, 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 when I was with the D-backs or anybody, go D-backs, enjoy your work. Hey, listen, my wife thinks you guys are great, loves you and Gracie, loves you and Gooby. I'm allowed to watch the games because she enjoys it. She enjoys the back and forth. She enjoys the conversation. I don't think I'm going to jam baseball down anyone's throat, but that's how we may win over fans right there. Be warm, be genuine as an announcer. You know, you get a bunch of 15-year-old boys who only watch the game here on clips. That's the only way they watch it. And they're in. They like the humor, the jocularity, the time when you poke someone in the ribs. Now, you can't miss the big moments. You can't miss the big moments, and you can't do it too much because your bosses won't like it all the time. But I think being warm and involving humor where it's organic really matters, and that helps to win over fans.
Well, Darren, you're one of the best. So we want to say thanks so much for taking the time this morning to come on Bottom Line Baseball and to just give us a little insight into your career and especially this Angels team.
Keep doing it, man. I'm far from one of the best. I'm just a fan with the press pass. I appreciate it, though.